I guess we're just hating on Blake this entire episode.
It's a weird Blake.
I do wish he was here because
on.
You know if he was here, he'd be going insane right now. Because then he'd also have the Arsenal rant about them not signing a striker, probably. Oh yeah, it would have been a generational podcast. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the 6 Yard Box podcast for episode 81. And we're here, just the two of us, me and Antoine, because Blake is a little bit sick. But we're here to talk about some big, big Premier League games. We're here to talk about transfer deadline day, which we are in the midst of as we speak. We have some breaking news just like pop up during live on a pod recording. That'd be nice. And
First ever.
Yeah. And we'd also have some big, big, big topics to get into around the football world, some rants to get into about certain clubs. It is a horrible week for Blake because this would have been a perfect, perfect, perfect time for him to come in, shit on my team, prop up his, who just beat Man City, and he'll have a legendary rant in there too. But unfortunately, sickness gets everybody eventually, and Blake is out of commission for today. But Antoine is here, joined with me instead. How you doing, my brother?
I was practicing that we hear all morning. Yep. And I'm proud of it. I think I did a good job. But no, I'm doing good. We also know the Champions League round of 32 draw, or the playoff draw.
Oh my God, I didn't even think of that.
Some pretty good games in there. But yeah, overall doing pretty good. Had a good weekend. Watched my team win.
Yep. Big FPL week.
So did you. Or? Yeah. Not for everyone.
Oh my God, dude. Yeah. I'm a little bit flustered this week because there's just like so many thoughts in my mind and so many things to get into, so many things to rant about.
Yeah.
I'm going to come off as a bitch in this episode. I already know.
If Blake was here, generational podcast.
If Blake was here, it'd be a generational.
Because I can't emulate what Blake brings to this pod as
an
Arsenal fan.
You can't. Blake is a special character.
He would have cooked.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't know if cooking is the word, but he would have been something. He would have been something for sure. Welcome everybody back to the pod. I mean, let's just get right into it. Do you want to go United first, or do you want to go PSG first, or what do you want to go? Because you're ring leading today.
Let's do United first. Oh, I don't want to start Liga. It's gonna scare the viewers away.
That's a good point, actually. Let's go United first. Let's go with the United game first. So United, not that I was feeling the best going into this game, but we...
Why?
Because we're 14th place in the league and I can't accept anything. I can't expect anything from this squad.
Okay, fair. Okay. But it is Crystal Palace, though.
I know. One of the worst teams in the league, you would think, but it's a perfect trap game. Not even trap game. We're just fucking shit anyways. So, like... United hosted Crystal Palace and Mateta scored a nice little brace to comfortably beat us 2-0. It was similar to the Brighton fixture where we just looked like absolutely nothing. We had nothing going forward and we just looked like a mess all game, could not control anything. Interestingly, Amorim, with the signal of all signals, doesn't even start a striker in this game. Both Xerxes and Højlund benched in this one. He played Kobbie Mainoo up top.
Bad radio. Kobbie Mainoo up top?
Oh, I didn't even hear that. It's okay. My notification didn't even...
Blame that on Raf.
What the fuck did Raf text you?
You bought yesterday, yeah? Yes, I did, Raf. Yes, I did. We can cut that out.
Okay, so... Amorim doesn't start a striker. He starts Kobbie Mainoo in a big signal to the board, like, hey, get me a striker, because Xerxes and Højlund are not doing it right now, which is correct. Mm-hmm. He starts Garnacho. He starts Ahmad. And he starts Bruno in the number 8/6 position. But again, we just don't have anything. We don't have like a point of attack. We have a few decent chances. Mainoo hit the post. But it's just looking flat. Mm-hmm. And like it's not
Your transition even... play definitely needs work.
Yeah. Which is odd because United used to look best.
Exactly. I was looking at old Ollie Ball clips. Yeah. They came up on my For You page. Man, in transition, you guys were... very good.
That was it. And Ten Hag had some moments as well because that's what the players were suited to. Mm-hmm. Rashford on the break, along with Martial and Bruno, all those guys, they're excellent on the break. But actually holding possession and being and operating like a good team, that's not in their DNA, I suppose. And this is an example of it.
So Mainoo up top. Does that mean anything for Xerxes and Hoyland, or is it just purely experimental, do you think?
Oh, it's a signal. That's what it is. It's a signal, it's a sign, it's a message that these two are not doing it, and I'm not in the business of starting two players that should not have a place in this team right now. Hoyland has been terrible for weeks now. So looks so low in confidence. Xerxes, we know. We know about Xerxes. He's awful.
Blake was here, man.
I told you. Like, I mean, awful is not the word, but like, not for this team. He's just, he's not cutting it for this team. And I mean,
there could also be that argument of a brief adaptation period, but it's February now. You know, like, you came in the summer. Manager's been here since November.
He's had performances.
He's had decent performances.
Even when he's not scoring or assisting, like, his hold-up play is decent. I still would have started Xerxes in this game. I don't think starting Mainu there instead is the right move. He put up such a great performance in the Europa League, playing in the number 10 position, which was new. Mm-hmm. Was man of the match in that game, got a goal and assist. And because you're moving him off the striker, you're also taking him out of his best position.
Totally.
Also meaning you have to move Bruno down to the 8, and then you have to bring Garnacho in, who didn't look the best. And it's like...
But we also said a couple weeks ago that Mainu didn't fit this Amorim system. So obviously you're going to try to include such a good player into your system one somehow.
And that's what playing him in the 10 was. Mm-hmm. Playing him in the 10 was new. We had never seen it before. And he did very well there. It's when he played in the number 8 where it was a bit like, okay, didn't really have the physicality, didn't really have the legs to do it consistently. Maybe it's just because he's tired. Maybe one day he could fill in there, whatever. But since Amorim came in, he hasn't really been doing it at the 8. At the 10, he looked decent. I know it was just one game against a pretty shit team. But then to play him at number 9, well, what are we doing there?
Yeah. I think Xerxes' adaptation in regards to Hoyland last year, at this point last year, Hoyland had already made a significant enough impact to where his transfer price was slightly justified. Xerxes, for me, at this point in the season, it's still a little unjustified, and I'm still hungry. I still want more from him.
No, 100%. Hoyland, I want more from too, because this was supposed to be like last year. He was mostly dry, but then had these spells where he was brilliant, right? Scored like 9 games in a row, whatever. And you would think that he would take a step up this year, but especially after Amorim came in, he's looked like a shell of himself. Mm-hmm. And when Amorim came in, you know, doing so well with Gyökeres, we were like, wow, Hoyland is going to absolutely cook under this manager. And I think he's one of the top scorers in the Europa League, but in the Prem especially, like, I can't remember the last time this guy scored in the league. It's like his goal record for United in the league is absolutely abysmal. And sometimes his hold-up play would be nice and he would add to the game even when he's not putting the ball in the back of the net. But lately...
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, he's like a trampoline, bro. He's like Lukaku playing Timberlands. I'm telling you, like, he just can't... He just looks so low on confidence. And confidence is obviously such a big thing for a striker, like we know with Kai Havertz. But...
just a jab in there. This either means two things. This either means Gyökeres is a spectacular striker that needs to be bought to a big team and can adapt himself to any system in the world, or it means that Amorim's ideals and the way he wants his striker to play hasn't been understood by Hoyland yet.
Yeah. Again, Gyökeres would do so well on the break, like we mentioned. Yeah. Like, a lot of his best moments was like a through ball from one of the wingbacks, and he would get in behind pretty often. You don't really see Hoyland doing that as much because that's not the way that this United team is playing. I hope we can get to a point where that is happening, but he just has not figured out that kind of transition from Ten Hag ball to how Amorim wants to play, which you can say for everybody else too. I mean, if we just go through the entire team, there's also Martinez who got injured.
I was going to bring that up.
That as well. Amorim said it looks like a serious one. And by the way, he was stretchered off and the pain he looked in. He might be out for the season. And that's such a shame because over the past couple of weeks, he's looked so much better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he was one of your best players, quite frankly.
He was. And Maguire next to him didn't look the greatest. And now this means that
The left side of center back for United now is a real problem because Yoro has played there, but obviously hasn't, you know, developed.
Yoro started in this game and I thought he actually looked decent, but
yeah. But it's the lack of left sided center backs in that team. Like Matisse de Ligt came on.
Yeah.
And he's right footed, correct? Yeah. So
The one thing I'm hoping is that either Luke Shaw can slot in at left center back, or with Dorgu coming in, that means Dalot can play on the right, and that means Mazraoui can come play that center back role that he did very well at the start of Emery's time.
What do you think is the best option?
I think the best option is the one that gives you the most depth, because that's the option that keeps you the furthest away from starting Lindelof.
Mm-hmm. Which would be?
Disastrous.
Yeah. I think Luke Shaw center back, I wouldn't be bothered by that too much.
I would not be bothered by that too much. But injuries. We need like a month for Luke there's Shaw no guarantees to, like, to get up to sharpness.
Yeah.
And then there's absolutely no guarantees. We get another tweet. I've had a setback in my injuries. Oh my God, dude. Let's give some love to Palace, man. Mateta is just that guy. He's just that guy, isn't it? I like
him. He's like the striker who always finds a way to score.
He is. He is. And Gehi put up a good performance as well, along with Lacroix. Gehi, by the way, getting bid on by Spurs.
Yeah, I saw that. Rejected by Crystal Palace.
Yeah, may not be a Palace player by the end of this window. Who knows? Yeah. Who knows? I thought Munoz looked really good down the right.
Yeah, he's a proper player.
Yeah.
Daniel Munoz, hey.
Oh, yeah.
I'm wearing the kit for a reason.
Yeah, there you go.
I'm wearing the kit for shout out. What a right back he is.
I know.
Defensively, offensively, great. Very good. Nothing to say.
Yep. And then, God, who else is there? Dean Henderson legacy game as well. Can't forget.
Yeah.
Because every time. Goddamn time. God, dude.
Crystal Palace have turned the season around, though, in a way that not many teams would be able to do. Remember, they started the first five games. I think they were last.
Yeah.
And Oliver Glasner was supposed to be this manager that would bring this team to a top 10, like, you know how they finish top 10 every season, and
yeah,
or 10th every season. But Oliver Glasner was supposed to be that guy that brought you higher and brought you into the European places. They started 20th for the first 5, 6, 7 games of the season, and now they're 12th above United, above Spurs. What a way to turn the season around.
Oh my God. Yeah, they passed us in the table with that win. We're 2 points ahead of Spurs, bro. What are we doing? And we play Spurs next.
And suddenly you're 2 points ahead of Spurs in like sixth. You're 2 points ahead of Spurs in 13th. We have
29 points. 29 points. Oh my God. Does Liverpool have double the points as us? Almost double the points as us.
Oh, it's close.
It's
2 points away from double.
Oh my God, brother. We're going to come back to United because there's other things to rant about. But let's move on to the other games. Let's give some love to some other teams. I want to give a shout out to Nottingham Forest, who...
wow.
Hell of a reaction to getting beaten 5-0, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. The weird thing about this game is that Brighton had more of the ball.
Yeah.
And they got thrashed 7-0. I think that just shows how clinical Forest is in front of the net. How good of a season Chris Wood is having. Seriously, who would have thought that at the beginning of the season, that Chris Wood of all players would be firing off all cylinders? Is he top goal scorer in the Premier League?
Oh God, yes. I know this is the first hat-trick in the Prem for Forest since like 81 or something like that.
No, he's not. He's not top scorer. What am I saying? Mo Salah, obviously, is top scorer in the Premier League.
Is he's top three, though?
He's top four. He's fourth. 17 goals in the Premier League. And
who's third?
It's Isak.
Ah, yes, that makes sense. That makes sense.
Yeah, 17 goals in the Premier League as a striker who was playing for Burnley three seasons ago.
Insane.
A relegated Burnley. Like, and wasn't he at Newcastle a couple years or last year?
I don't even remember, dude.
I think he was at Newcastle last year as like a backup striker to Wilson and Isak. So, yeah. Wow, what a turnaround.
Shout out to Langa as well.
Langa too, eh?
Talking about rejects.
It's just everywhere you look, man. Everywhere you look.
Oh, God. Yeah. Shout out Forest, bro. They're doing what we expect of them, I guess, at this point. Like, and Brighton are no bad team at all.
Yeah, they're a good team.
They are. Bournemouth, I mean, how good is Bournemouth? That's what this tells you. Bournemouth losing 2-0 to Liverpool as well.
My goodness. There. Justin Kluivert. To turn the game on its head, wide open. And come on, man. You have to do better than that. You have to do better than that. At 1-0 down, you completely flip the game on its head if you score that goal. And the momentum's in your favor. The lads are pushing. But no, you just no. And then they score right off the back of that.
No. Did you see that there's like a situation at Bournemouth in that exact same spot on the pitch? Did you see that?
No, I didn't.
It was like, because the situation was like, was it Semenyo or Ouattara that took a long shot, hit off the like crossbar, bounced to him on the right side, but he fluffed it? That was the Clivert miss?
Yeah.
There was a situation where like the exact same thing happened a couple of games earlier where I don't think it was Clivert, but it was like one of these players off the rebound, off of hitting the woodwork, just fluffs it just like that. That exact same way, misses in the same spot, goes to the same technique,
yeah,
the same area of the pitch, an open goal as well.
I guess it's not that easy to score it. I mean, the ball's on the half volley, but you then again, you still have an empty net in front of you.
Yeah.
Nothing in the way.
Facts.
So, yeah, but Liverpool looking strong still.
Yeah. I know. And this is the thing with them. Like, they're...
What did you say earlier about...
Like, oh my God, we're going to get into it when we get to Arsenal.
Yeah.
But, like...
Best we wait.
I'm just kind of flustered with this Premier League season, man. Because I don't know who to cheer for. I don't know who to hate on. Because I just want to hate on everybody. And my team is so shit. And I was telling Antoine before the podcast that, like, Arsenal have done something that I would never expect. And that is wanting Liverpool to win the league. I said a couple weeks ago, I said to Blake, and Blake went crazy on me because Liverpool is our biggest historical rival. But, bro,
you are the only Man United fan.
I'm telling you, I'm telling you, there are more people like me
that wants Liverpool to win.
No, I doubt that because seeing how annoying Arsenal have been, Blake is fine, Miles is great. But some of their fans, bro, either by being annoying or being criminals, whatever, I don't want to see them in the league, bro. Even beating City yesterday, like, I thought that was so embarrassing how like the way some people were acting about that, genuinely. And it makes
In what world is a rival fan of the team that is first in the Premier League wants them to win? Because of the annoyance.
Arsenal's a rival. In brackets,
annoyance.
Arsenal's
because,
yes,
Arsenal fans sometimes are annoying, but it's your fucking rival team, lad. It is your rival team. The team that you have the most history against in hatred and everything else.
I can't name a Liverpool fan I hate. Genuinely, I can't hate a Liverpool fan I hate.
It's not about the fans, brother.
I get history and all that, but I hate Man City way more.
What is going on?
Of course, I understand, but I hate Man City way more than I hate Liverpool, historically. All right? Whatever. Like, I hate Man City way more than I hate Liverpool. And I don't care about the history or whatever.
So if Man City were first right now, you would still want them to win because of Arsenal fans' annoyance?
No, that I'd want Arsenal to win the league. Because City, I hate above all. City, I hate above all. That's number one.
But how can you not hate Liverpool as a United fan?
I hated Liverpool in 2020 when Arsenal fucking sucked. And it was entertaining as fuck to see that. But, bro, just call me pure fucking salty. Like, it's 2025 and I see Arsenal as more of a rival and more of an annoyance to United.
Bro, what is going on? How?
What do you mean how?
Is it because you have Arsenal fan friends? Like... Or is it because of the media portraying Arsenal fans as...
I guess it's the media, and it's not even the fans that I know personally, but it's the fans that I see online and just their overall fucking attitude, bro. It's so fucking annoying. They're so goddamn pretentious.
Like
and
how?
And they're so like...
Like how?
The fucking 18-year-old... oh my God.
18-year-old what?
Have some respect. That's all I'm fucking saying. Goddamn shame. You've not won a trophy in 5 years, even though you've been title contenders for most of that time. You finally beat Man City after like 10 attempts. And fair enough. Like, you beat them very convincingly. They haven't beat them before, to be fair. But you beat them convincingly. And obviously Man City are shit. But
it's almost like the Premier League champions were talking shit and you just thrashed them 5-1. Obviously, there's going to be some retaliation and some sort of cockiness celebrations.
Bro. They're the fucking champions. Like, I respect them doing that. Whatever. Like, they can do that because they've won it. They earned that. All right? Arsenal, dude. I'm sorry, but what have you guys done to be talking shit like that? You are about to be 9 points off the top of the Premier League. You're having a shit season. And whoop-de-doo, you caught Man City in their worst fucking season in the last 10 or 20 years. Great fucking, great job, everybody. Great job. You should feel so great about yourselves. Of course, it was the youngster scoring, and 5-1 is something nobody expected. Of course, fantastic performance. I'm taking nothing away from that. What the fuck? The way I'm seeing some people act about this.
So that justifies you wanting Liverpool to win the league. That is fucking disgusting.
I wanted Liverpool. Okay, for a little bit there, I was going back to Arsenal. I'm like, okay, no, it would be nice to see Arsenal finally win the league, whatever, whatever. But after yesterday, no, I'm back on that train.
Bro, like, what are you doing?
If I'm cheering for anything, it's like the Eagles and the Chiefs in the Super Bowl. I don't want anybody to win, right? Hate both of them. I want the Dark Knight Rises to happen where the field just fucking collapses in on itself and it's a no contest, right? Yeah. That's what I want to really happen if I have to pick something. But if I have to pick one of the two evils, I would rather Liverpool win the league because I wouldn't see as much fucking bullshit on my timeline than I would with Arsenal.
There are some
all respect to Miles Lewis-Skelly. Fantastic young player. He's got a great future ahead of him.
And Wineri.
We didn't even get to that. But have some fucking shame. Have some goddamn shame to be doing that on to Man City, who have won 4 Premier League titles in a row and have the best striker in the world and have had your number for years and years and years. It just felt like Arsenal were kind of like projecting the fucking pain they had playing Man City in the last couple of years. When Man City beat Arsenal 4-1 2 years ago when they were in a tight title race and that fucking ended all hopes of Arsenal winning the league. Did you see them fucking doing the most and everything and doing all these celebrations and being extra and rubbing in all like this? No, you didn't see that because it was all business for Man City. It was normal for them. I feel like if Arsenal were actually a good team, legitimately with the mindset to challenge for the title, they would not be bigging it up like they were last night.
You still beat the champions, though.
You beat the champions. Respect, of course. But, bro, you're taking it on another level. Like, Gabriel celebrating in the face of Haaland. Fucking Miles Lewis-Skelly recreating his celebration. Like, all these guys fucking talking loads of shit and like, oh, aura. Look at the aura in this picture. Have some fucking shame. You're having a terrible season. You're 9 points back. You're supposed to be competing for the title. You're not going to win the Premier League. You're probably not going to win the Champions League. You have another trophy-less season.
And look at the shirt he's wearing, everybody.
We're fucking ass, too. I'm not... Blake's response to this yesterday in the group chat was like, oh, look where United is. Great! I'm so offended. You really got me with that one.
What did it for me was the sad face emojis. Oh,
he thought he cooked there. I'm like, oh shucks. I forgot we lost to Palace today. Thanks for reminding me, Blake. Like, Jesus Christ, bro.
I don't know. I still don't think it justifies you wanting Liverpool to win the league, but I do see where you're coming from. Like, from the perspective that Arsenal fans sometimes do tend to get a little bit annoying and a little bit ahead of themselves after not winning a league in 20 years. But wanting Liverpool to win the league is still diabolical, in my opinion.
I will stand by it. I will stand fucking by it. Okay. I'll be happy. You know what? If Arsenal won the league, I'd be happy for Miles. I'd be happy for Miles because he'd be there on the trophy tour in the Emirates celebrating with everybody. He'd be in London and that'd be fantastic.
That'd be great for him.
That'd be great. That'd be great.
We all want that for Miles.
He's a nice guy. He gets on my nerves sometimes too. But nice guy. Would love to see that happen. And obviously seeing Blake happy about it. If he's respectful, then so I'd be Blake, over the moon with him too.
Mm-hmm.
Like, of course, I'll take fucking anything over City winning the league title for 4 years straight. Like, genuinely, I'd be okay with it. But I just know I'd see some bullshit that makes me so annoyed. And I'd see some, like, oh my God, them being it up. If they win the Premier League and they're still talking shit next season, fair, whatever, whatever. Whatever. Because at that point, you've earned it.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, totally.
But to be doing it at this current moment where you have 0 trophies, right? You're 9 points off the top. You're looking at another trophy-less season. And all you've known is mediocrity for 20 years now. have some shame, have some respect, know your place. It's the same thing. Blake said this exact point. I went back and watched our episode after we beat City, and Blake said about the Bruno celebration, you're doing too much there, lad.
What was it again? It was like he scored a pen. And then he comes up, he does this celebration.
And Blake, like word for word, went like, know your fucking place.
No, yeah, what'd he say? He's like, have some shame.
Have some shame. He said, have some shame, lad.
Have some shame.
A month later, look what we're doing.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
But I guess the argument there is that they're still contending for the title while you guys were very low on the table during that time and still are.
I don't give a fuck. Mikel Arteta did a pre-match interview that I watched, and the interviewer asked him, like, obviously with all the emotions in the game last time, have you told your players to like take the emotion out of it and just approach it in a professional level? And he went, yes, of course. That's going to be the key to winning this game. Fair enough. They won the game pretty convincingly. But when you're letting the emotions get to you like that, like you are bound to fucking slip up. I'm sorry, but what I saw from Arsenal yesterday was not a champion fucking mindset that is convincing me that they're going to go on a run now and win the Premier League. I would not be surprised that if they're in their next game, they just drop points now because, oh, they're too busy celebrating that fucking, they beat City. Whoop-de-doo, they beat City.
Yeah, hungover from the night before.
Fucking hang a banger up, man. You beat City. Congratulations. Yeah. Like, job is not fucking finished. And if you have the championship mentality that Rodri was talking about last season, then that's exactly what you would be thinking. But no, I bet they busted out some champagne yesterday after the win, and they're going to be fucking doing a trophy tour and fucking driving around London all happy that they beat Man City. Finally, they beat Man City.
Didn't they beat them last year?
They beat them last year 1-0 off of a Trossard goal. But it wasn't like this, is what I'm saying.
They didn't thrash them at their lowest.
Yes. God damn it, dude.
So I guess that's the Arsenal City game done with, right?
Yeah.
We can skip over that. I mean, not really much analysis to talk about.
There's definitely some flowers to give out here because yes. I want to be objective and you know.
Savinho being one of them.
That was a great cross into Haaland for the goal, to be fair. The one time Gabriel let Haaland go. obviously, like, the Arsenal defenders put up a great performance. Like, I cannot hate on the performance. Like, fair enough on that. My only gripe is just giving it the big end. You know? Like
the celebrations, the post-match.
It's like when they beat Liverpool last year and there were debates about, like, you know, Odegaard taking the picture of the photographer and them over-celebrating. Yeah. I think they over-celebrated way worse this time than they did against Liverpool last year. But I'm seeing no, like, debate this time around.
Yeah.
You know?
100%.
So, yeah. Havertz looked awful, but rectified his mistake, to be fair.
There seems to be a confidence issue in Havertz. Because on that first goal, any striker in the world shoots that.
Yeah.
Any striker in the world shoots that. Even any winger, any player
in
the world shoots that.
Yeah.
He squares it to Odegaard, which ends up working for him. But man, if you somewhat have a little bit of confidence within yourself and within your abilities to put a ball in the fucking back of the net, you hammer that home.
Yeah.
And he just passed it to Odegaard. Good thing it worked because, I mean, that would have been pretty embarrassing. And I'm pretty sure 15 minutes later, he misses a very good chance.
Yeah, that chance was funny.
Yeah.
but no, look, he rectified his mistake. Look, you couldn't do it when it was 1-0, still a tight score, and you actually have to put the ball in the back of the net there. But
when it's 3-1.
When it's 3-1 and the pressure is off a little bit, then he finishes then. I want to give a shout out to Wineri as well, of course, because we put out a video saying,
yes.
Stop me when you hear a better youngster than Ethan Wineri, and Blake got some stick about it, but the video actually
aged very well.
Aged very well. Pretty freaking decent.
Yeah.
And Mazlou Skelly as well. Again, I'm not hating on the fucking player here. I'm not criticizing the football performance, but it's just a little bit of the lack of shame that I saw that irks me a little bit.
Oh yes, but that player is something special.
For sure.
And I think that whole left flank has completely changed. I remember before Christmas, in semester one, we were talking about how devastating the left flank would be with, as a joke, right? With Martinelli, Mikel Merino, and
Calafiori.
But yesterday it was Mazlou Skelly, Declan Rice, and
Trossard.
Trossard. And man, did they combine well. Usually you think of midfield trios, you think of forward trios and defensive fourths, but on one side of the pitch, on the left side of the pitch, they cooked. They were passing it in triangles, in transition, keeping the possession, whatever it was always working on the left side. And Declan Rice was a great facilitator to that. But Lewis Skelly and Trossard also played a major part in that success that trio had.
Absolutely. Yeah, good little feature they got going there. Kind of funny that they brought in Calafiori for all that money, but they just
found Miles Lewis Skelly.
They found Miles Lewis Skelly instead. I'm sure he's going to hold down that place for the foreseeable future. And this team looks good. I can't knock the performance whatsoever. When Saka comes back, it's going to be scary hours a little bit. Now, if only...
Which is when?
Probably like March.
Okay.
Yeah, still another month without Saka. But if they can get to the later stages of the Champions League...
Yeah, later stages. Back, still contending for the Premier League maybe when he comes back.
Maybe. It's a long shot at this point. Mm-hmm. But again, it is that nine that they'll be regretting, because it doesn't look like they're going to sign anybody this window unless some bombshell goes off after we're done recording. But... Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm feeling good. I'm not feeling bad about Arsenal in terms of this game.
Let's do some more games.
I'm not too sure. Where do you want to go next, Anto?
I mean, Newcastle lost to Fulham, but not really much there.
No.
Fulham's still a decent team. Tottenham beat Brentford 2-0.
Which was a little bit of a shock, because if you looked at the stats of the game, it's like how you would expect this fixture to go in the reverse a couple of years before, where it'd be Tottenham dominating, but Brentford grabbing two. But no, it was Brentford at home, who's been really good at home this whole season, kind of dominating Tottenham, but Tottenham got some chances. Yanel's own goal off the corner looked a little bit hideous. And then later, Sar added a second one, and Tottenham steals the win, basically.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think this is like a, oh my God, Tottenham are back.
No.
Again, at the wheel,
no,
kind of performance, but it is what it is.
Do you want, speaking of Tottenham, there's been a signing. Do you want to get to that now, or do you want to
get into that?
Because we can hit some more teams before going to the transfer talk.
I want to hit some more teams before we get to the transfer talk, and then we'll take a little break and we collect my thoughts before I explode again.
Premier League wise, I think that's pretty much it.
Yeah, wasn't the craziest week in the Prem. We have Chelsea, West Ham today.
Yes,
could be a good little game there.
Yeah.
Especially for us Palmer owners. But yeah, let's go La Liga, I guess.
La Liga, Real Madrid lost 1-0.
Yes, I saw that. What happened?
Can tell you. this week was poor for myself. I was quite busy, so I didn't get to watch many games. But I know that they controversially lost 1-0 because the player that scored the goal should have been sent off earlier for a challenge on Mbappe that only received a yellow card.
Really? What happened to Madrid?
Yeah, what happened?
Wow.
Yeah. And what happened to Blake's referee talk where...
You'll never... Oh my God, yeah.
Apparently it's in every league, so... But Real Madrid dropping points, which I will say, I was making predictions and I didn't see them dropping points in more than three games, or losing in more than three games in the remainder of La Liga, but Espanyol have proved me wrong. Espanyol, who are 17th, by the way. So real, jeez. Real upset.
Yeah.
But yeah, as Real Madrid were picking up their stride and putting up good performances, Mbappe firing off all cylinders, Espanyol completely flipped that around. I don't think it'll impact them that much. It's just it's a little pebble in their garden.
Pebble in their garden?
Yeah.
I've never heard that.
Oh, well, now you have.
I'm seeing Rudiger got injured as well.
Yes.
They're already playing Tchouaméni at the back, so if that's going to be a problem, then that's going to be a big problem.
Yeah, because Tchouaméni hasn't been playing good at all this season.
No.
At all this season. Whether it was center back or defensive midfield in the double pivot, it's been poor this season. Center back being the worst position for him. So Rudiger being injured makes that even worse, because it means that he will be filling in for longer.
Yeah. It says here that... He's reported to be out for at least 17 days, ruling him out of the Copa del Rey quarterfinal against Leganes and a huge league clash with Atletico.
Mm-hmm. Next week.
Preview, and the first leg of the Champions League knockout phase playoff against City.
Okay, so a couple
weeks.
So that
is dangerous.
A couple weeks. At least it's not a season-ending injury.
For
because
sure.
Because Real Madrid definitely need him and center backs in general. They have the youngster Asensio on the bench, who has been looking decent this season. I don't know why Carlo Ancelotti doesn't want to start him. But hey, if Cubarsí can do it for Barca, I don't see how Asensio can't do it for Real Madrid.
Yeah. Yeah. Ancelotti and youth just don't really fit together.
That is true. Ancelotti at Real Madrid is a whole other topic of conversation. Many, many people are Ancelotti out.
Yeah, I'm
including myself.
Yeah, I'm not that deep in my eyes, but sure.
Yeah, I mean they'll be fine with him for the rest of the season, but I think the plan is clear for Real Madrid. Ancelotti leaves at the end of the season. Xabi Alonso comes in.
Yeah,
and it's just up from there.
Yeah,
with that super team.
Yeah, fair. Oh my god, I've been so bad with the cuts today. Oh my goodness. It's all
good. We have the new cameras.
Yeah, that's true. That is true. Yeah. Okay, I want to ask you: did you see the news about Sergio Ramos?
I did, but I forgot them. Is it the he got signed for?
Got signed by a Mexican team.
Mexican team.
So random. Mm-hmm. He will be playing for Rayados.
Yeah.
Pre-contract signed today. He's set to travel to Mexico for formal steps. After Sevilla chapter, Ramos will play in Mexican League as he joins on a free transfer.
Yeah.
So random. So random.
Do you know what number he's going to wear?
No, what number?
Number 93. Do you know why?
Why?
It was the time on the clock when he scored the equalizing goal in the Champions League final against Atletico Madrid.
You're doing too much now.
I swear to God. Oh, me doing too much or him?
He's doing too much.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
I thought you were like, you're lying. No, seriously. That's the reason.
Shit, really?
Yeah.
That's so random.
That is random. Well, I guess it's a sentimental number to him. Like, he single-handedly brought Madrid back from a losing position to a Champions League title.
That's fair. But like, you know, like, what year was your kid born? You know, like...
They're not going to have a 05 on the back. Oh, yeah.
05, is that?
You think
that? I don't know.
I have no idea. I don't know. I had a kid.
I don't know. What year did you get married? Yeah, I don't know. Like, what year were you born? I don't know. Like, damn. Okay. Yeah. Real Madrid not looking the absolute best right now. They're still top of La Liga, and they still had a little bit of a cushion. But, interestingly, their next game is Atletico Madrid. So, that'll be an interesting one for sure. Barcelona won at the weekend as well through a Lamine Yamal. I was going to say through a Lamine Yamal goal. No, ugly is too hard. It was a Lewandowski goal.
Yep.
Lamine Yamal kind of assist. Yes. Yeah.
Pretty much provided by Lamine Yamal.
Pretty much. Yeah. Pretty much. Took a little deflection.
But. I'm counting that as 11 assists for the season so that Blake can shut the fuck up about his... in the league. Lamine Yamal has 5 goals and 10 assists.
It was the sass that he said too. It's like he cooked something too. It's like Saka didn't even have better stats than him, bro. Like, what are you doing?
Like, why are we stat watching
in
here?
In two less games. Like, that's some earth-shattering bit of news there. I'm like, okay.
All that to put up a shit argument as well.
I know.
Unbelievable. Do better.
I did see what he's saying. Like, you could say Yamal's better, but to say he's clear, like the way Salah is clear, to say he's that much like head and shoulders better than Saka.
No, he is. And I'll stand by that.
I respect that opinion. I do think it's a little crazy to say about a...
Just like how I think you wanting Liverpool to win the league is fucking insane. But no, see, like, I'm taking Rodrigo over Saka.
Low-key,
like,
I'm thinking about that too.
Let's be fucking honest here.
He went, like, he didn't want to have that conversation.
He didn't.
But personally?
Like, I didn't want to start that because when he said, in that conversation, he said... Rodrigo, don't even think about it. Like, I wanted to say something.
I was thinking about it.
Because, let's be honest, Rodrigo's just better. He's just a better player.
Yeah.
But it was just going to start a whole
I can't say
thing.
For certainty because I don't watch Real Madrid every week, but every time I do, in the Champions League mostly, Rodrigo fucking cooks, dude. Yeah. And he takes such a low-key part of that team because he's so overshadowed by Mbappe and Vinny and Bellingham. But he was supposed to be, like... You know, the ugly duckling that was supposed to kind of be shadowed out of Real Madrid, but he's putting up numbers and he's putting up great performances for them this season. And just like the way he strikes the ball, the goals that he scores, his dribbling ability, even like just his instinct for goal is crazy. And I think it's so overshadowed by the fact he plays for Real Madrid. If Arsenal signed Rodrigo, I think Blake would quickly see like, wow, this guy is actually insane.
There's no question. The fact that he has more Champions League goals than R9 Ronaldo.
Yeah.
No one ever talks about that.
I think he's like very, very, very underrated. I've been saying that for like years, but...
almost every time Madrid have a game, he scores.
Yeah.
He's implicated in a third, if not half, of Madrid's game, Madrid goals most of the time.
Yeah. No, 100%. Yeah, Rodrigo, six goals, 5 assists this season. He's only played 15 games, but like, man.
It's just the argument. Blake's argument is just fueled by bias.
Of course it's fueled by bias.
He's never going to turn down Saka. It's his favorite player of all time. Like,
yeah.
It's just, we're never going to win that argument.
We could win that argument if they prove us right.
No, they will prove us right. We'll win the argument.
But he'll never
let
it go.
But in a conversation, in a debate, he'll always have the upper hand because of that sentimental connection that he has with the player.
Not even upper hand. I think it's a disadvantage personally. But yeah.
I mean, yeah. But to him, he'll have the upper hand. Fair. And he'll never see that he's wrong.
Bro, what caught me last week was that he was calling you biased. I was like,
you open your motherfucking eyeballs. I was like, what the fuck?
I was like, brother, like if you're a Barca fan, like fair enough, like yes. That's bias there. But
yes.
But bro, how could he call you bias mm-hmm. when he's the one arguing for Saka so like intensely? I didn't understand that.
Yeah.
Anyways, I guess we're just hating on Blake this entire episode.
It's a weird Blake.
I do wish he was here because
on.
You know if he was here, he'd go insane right now. Because then he'd also have the Arsenal rant about them not signing a striker, probably. Oh yeah, it would have been a generational podcast, everybody. Mm, I'm sorry. Apparently Serena's also feeling sick, so I think Blake spread something to her.
Oh no.
Yeah.
Get well soon, guys.
Get well soon, man. Something's in the air. Something's in the air. If it's spread to me, that's both of us gone.
Yeah.
And Dan Berlin gone too.
And then no.
Fuck. Damn it.
I want to touch about PSG a little bit.
Yes,
more specifically Dembele. Dembele is on 2 hat tricks in his last 2 games. 2 hat tricks in his last 2 games for Dembele. That is the first time that that's been achieved by a PSG player. And what a turnaround this player has had.
For sure.
From being injured almost every game for Barcelona. His nickname Deambulance, something like that. His nickname is Deambulance. I know you saw that viral video where the Barca team
is coming out
in cars and is in
Vamos Dembélé! Vamos!
Vamos Dembélé! But no, like ever since he's joined PSG, he's played I think every single game that he's been fit to play, and when he plays them, he puts in performances. He's never injured, and he's just turned around his entire finishing game all He just turned around his entire finishing game like completely around. I remember that chance against Liverpool when he was a Barcelona player to make it 4-0, which would have secured the tie for Barcelona to go into the Champions League semifinals.
He
fluffed his lines. But now he's scoring hat tricks. He's putting shots on target. He's finishing his chances. It's incredible. And he's that player that people were saying could be better than Mbappe one day, has more potential than Mbappe. Obviously, he's not better than Mbappe. But now people that were saying that seem to be right in some way.
Valid. Yeah. I'm seeing Varane assist. How'd it be?
Yeah, he had a... I don't know about his game. He didn't have a great game. He didn't have the greatest game.
Hmm.
But obviously, adaptation, new country. Doesn't speak the language. Not that he spoke Italian, but...
Yeah. I see him doing well in Liga. It's a very... I don't want to say a slow league.
I see him doing better in the Champions League than Liga. Every time we play Liga teams that aren't on our level, it's just low block.
Did you see what Danso said about Liga?
No.
Well, he played in the Bundesliga before he played for Lens. Mm-hmm. And he said that... he made a big point out of this, basically saying that everybody says that Liga is a farmer's league, but I can tell you I played in both the Bundesliga and Liga, and I can tell you with certainty that Liga is a tougher league, which I thought that was pretty surprising.
I'm not surprised. There's more intensity in Liga.
Really?
But between the teams that aren't not PSG. When PSG plays, it's low block most of the time. Rarely any teams go for it against PSG.
Hmm.
But if it's like a Marseille-Monaco or even like a mid-table clash between Reims and Lens.
Yeah.
Like, it's most of the time it'll be good games. There was like an Olympico this weekend, which is the game between Marseille and Lyon. And that game finished 3-2 in a pretty stale first half, but the second half, man, 5 goals in the second half, great game all around. Marseille went from 1-0 down to 3-2 up. So there's good games in Ligue 1 if you don't watch PSG games because of the fact that teams play very defensively against PSG. So obviously they don't want to get humiliated and tank the goal difference.
Yeah, you said Ligue 1 is not a farmer's league. The players that have come from it prove that. The likes of Camavinga, Tchouameni, and Kylian Mbappe now play for Real Madrid. And that's just one example. There's so much young talent coming through. He also said that people don't know about. There's an abundance of talents that in 2 or 3 years will be at top clubs. Mm-hmm. They say France is a farmer's league. Why are so many top players coming out of Ligue 1? People who say this do not know about the league and do not watch the league regularly. Having played in both Ligue 1 and the Bundesliga, I can tell you that as a defender, Liga is way tougher.
I'm not surprised.
Damn.
Look at how many Premier League talents have come from Liga.
And now he's coming to Spurs, so he's about to get his toughest challenge.
Exactly.
Yeah. Bro's fucked.
No, I don't think he's fucked. He's a good little center back. He was starting for Austria in the Euros.
Bro, Lund's getting fucking rinsed this window. Jesus.
Yes, they did. They got rinsed.
Entire back line.
In the center back department.
Yeah.
But I think they're getting someone from City on loan. Juma Ba.
Oh, okay.
Something like that.
Oh, yes, I did.
Because now they have a good relationship with City, so.
Bit of breaking news here, Antoine.
Oh.
Lisandro Martinez has torn his ACL and his season is over. He's done.
No.
His season is over.
From bad to worse for United?
Yep. Does that mean we'll sign a center back today? No, it does not.
Yeah, it doesn't.
We're fucking incompetent.
Is it transfer talk now, I guess?
Yeah.
Sticking with that, with the Lisandro Martinez thing.
Let's move on to transfer talk. There's some obvious places to go. There have been some transfers from clubs. There have been some non-transfers from clubs. I think we got to talk about it nonetheless. United, I want to start with because, wow, they are really pissing me off in every which way possible here. United, at the end of the game yesterday, the one silver lining was like, oh, we get a report from Plenty Goal that, oh my God, Matisse Tell has decided that he wants to join Manchester United. It was the day after he rejected Tottenham and he goes, okay, he really wants to come to United. Surely we can't fuck this up. An hour later, the deal is off because United don't want to sign him permanently and only wants to do a straight loan deal. Well, here we are a day later, Antoine, and the club that Tell didn't want to go to is now getting Tell on a straight loan deal. What the fuck are we doing? What the fuck are we doing? What the fuck are we doing? So Tottenham are covering 100% of his wages, but there's no obligation to buy, right? I don't think there's a buy option. It's just a straight loan, and he'll be back at Bayern in 6 months. Meanwhile, I think that's exactly what we were offering. And a day ago, we were being told that
He wanted to come
to United and that a straight loan wasn't possible. And now here we are, Spurs. I don't know the kind of action they're moving with, but they're getting rejected by everybody, left, right, and center. But they somehow convinced this guy that, oh no, actually come to us.
Yeah.
For a straight loan.
That's crazy.
And we're here caught with our fucking tail tied between our legs. Like, what are we doing? What the fuck are we doing? We've been pushing for this guy for like a week now. And he chose us over Arsenal, over Spurs, over Chelsea. He wants to come to United over everybody. And a day later, he's going to the club that he said he didn't want to go to. What the fuck are we doing? Generally, what the fuck are we doing? What does Spurs have over us that we can't offer him? I don't understand it.
There's definitely a level of incompetency there from you guys, 100%. But Spurs have been underratedly having a very good transfer window.
Yeah.
I mean, they're signing two pretty big names.
And what, you're talking about Danso?
Kevin Danso and Matisse Tell.
They only pulled that deal because De Zassi rejected them. Like, yeah.
But it's still a good, very good. He was one of the highly rated center backs of Ligue 1.
Yeah.
Who had a very good campaign in 22-23. And then obviously he's had to adapt under Will Still because they play more of an aggressive man-marking system, whereas the old coach would play a three-back and he'd be the centerpiece in that three-back. Yeah. But he's still a very good center-back who started for Austria in the Euros. So to be a backup option for Axel Di Sassi, who obviously is probably better, I think he's still a very good signing. But yeah, Matty Stell, man, that's incompetency from United at its finest.
Absolutely. And we're supposed to, over the past year, they've been bringing in all these established names with experience in football, and we've been told, like, okay, we have these financial issues, but you, the fans, know, guaranteed, that we have the people at the top of the club that are competent and that are doing their absolute best and are actually operating at a decent level here with the funds that they have. And we believe that. We believe that. Some of the names you look up there, like, sure, like, they're not, like, you know, world-renowned names, but we were used to, like, you know, Woodward and the Glazers running our football business. So now, of course, it's an upgrade. So I knew that anybody competent there would not be making mistakes like this, but something has happened. Something has happened. And this is only broken, like, a couple of hours ago, but I'm expecting, like, a clear, concise reason as to why United did not pull the trigger here. And that can come in the name that they actually end up signing. If we end up signing, like a Leon Bailey, I don't love that signing, but it's whatever. It's a reason that they didn't get Tal, I suppose. Whatever. Or like, we need to sign somebody, because if we end up with either nobody or like an Agallo-esque signing where it's just like super panic buy, you know, no upside over Tal with all this upside, all this potential, all this present day quality, I have to ask why that deal didn't happen. I'm hearing reports too that Ange was on the phone with Tal like last night, convincing him why Tottenham is the right project. But bro, I know Ange could be a master of his words, but so can Amorim. Like, I don't understand how this has happened, how we've just choked this so badly. Like, and that was a position that we needed, bro. We've let go of Rashford, we've let go of Antony, and he can also play up top where we really desperately need that. Amorim didn't start a striker yesterday. All the signal that you need.
Is he a guaranteed starter for United? The same way he is a guaranteed starter for Tottenham, do you think? I don't think so. And I think that's probably what pushed him to join Tottenham and what Ange used as his accelerator to pursue him in joining Tottenham is that they have Richarlison up top. I mean, with all due respect, he isn't the greatest player in that position, and Matistel would probably do a better job than him. But you guys, you still have some great players at left wing and as striker. Xerxes, Højlund, who we were obviously trashing on in the beginning of this podcast, but can still put in a shift and will still put in a shift for you guys. And then you have Garnacho, who is a very, very promising player and that absolutely deserves game time. So starting ahead of them would be difficult. And in a six-month loan where you need game time because that's the thing that you're lacking at Bayern, I think Tottenham is probably the better option for him, even if he wanted United.
Option. I don't believe it's a better option whatsoever. Like, I think,
how so?
Well, okay, you bring up the thing with game time. I would never want to bring in a player where we're 100% guaranteeing them play time no matter their performance.
Why is that?
Right? Just bringing in a crucial first-team player, and no matter how they do, even being so young, no matter how they do, they're guaranteed football.
In an all-time worst season for United, where you're 13th and have nothing to lose, why wouldn't you bring in a player that would be guaranteed to start?
Because I want players to earn their places. We just got rid of Rashford, who I think was that exact problem, especially under Ten Hag. When Rashford was putting up shitter after shitter, Ten Hag stuck by him and had probably, you know, had verbally agreed with him that he's going to start every single game, no matter how badly he does. And clearly that does something to the player, where there's a level of acceptance with the performances that they're doing. Like, what Amorim has done with Garnacho, with Rashford, with Højlund, with all these guys that have basically been guaranteed football under the previous manager, he has signaled to them very loud and clear, if you do not put up the right performances that you should in a United shirt, I'm going to turn to other people. That's exactly how Casemiro has been kind of like shadowed out the team. That's why Eriksen stopped playing. That's why all of these guys have kind of stopped playing overnight that you wouldn't expect under Ten Hag or the previous managers, because Amorim has such a strong sense of principles that doesn't guarantee any player football, no matter the name that you are. You have to earn your place.
So yes, I agree that you have to earn your place when you sign someone in a straight deal. But then what is the point of a loan for a player if he does not get game time? When the whole point of a loan for a young player like Matisse Tel not getting game time at Bayern is to play more regularly in a more competitive physical league.
Like, just because he comes and isn't guaranteed football doesn't mean that he wouldn't play football. If yes. he is as good as he thinks he is, he should be eager to come to United and fight for a place. That's the kind of players that I want on this team. You know what I'm saying? If he has the confidence in himself to say, I want to leave Bayern because I want to take my career to the next level, then coming to United, saving them, having the confidence that you do as being like a great young player, then that should excite you, even with the challenge of other players in your position. You know?
Sure.
If you have the right mindset where you are like, okay, I want to fight for my place to make that club reach the best level it can. I want that player any day over the player that goes, no matter how good I'm doing, I just want to be guaranteed football and my paycheck. You know?
I just think there's a spot there waiting for him at Tottenham. There isn't a spot there waiting for him at United.
I think there's absolutely a spot here waiting for him at Tottenham. Or at United, sorry. I think there's absolutely a spot here for him. And it really pains me that he's going to talk.
I see your pain, though. I can totally understand.
Because we do need him.
Yes.
We do need reinforcements. And it is really...
Not saying you don't at all. I think you guys definitely do need him. And you do need reinforcements. Especially in the striker position. Even the left wing position. Garnacho can't be putting shifts every single week like that. You need backup. And Ahmad can't play on the left.
Yep.
I mean, Patrick Dorku was he play up there, but he's signed for left back. And he's gonna fit that system. So yeah, you do need players. That was a good profile for you guys. But Tottenham absolutely needed it.
Yeah, you're right. Absolutely. I just don't see how, from a player perspective, you choose Tottenham over United.
Yes.
In 2025, even with both teams being absolute shit. Honestly, I'm surprised Arsenal didn't put more of an effort in for him.
Yeah, me too.
We can get into Arsenal as well, but like the lack of activity from them in this window has really shocked me, because I almost thought it was, Blake kind of hinted at it here in this chair last week, but we have basically accepted from the start of this window that Arsenal know they need a striker and we trust them to get that done. Mm-hmm. But they haven't got that done. They have doubled down with Havertz up top and Gabriel Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
But as we were saying at the start of this month, that's probably not going to win you the title. So kind of shocked at the lack of urgency here.
If it is because of the loan situation, how they only want to bring loans in, I think they already have two loans, which is the maximum in the Premier League. But then again, you could very well just send Sterling back.
Well,
and
yeah, you very well could send Sterling back. But then also, at the same time, you're bidding 60 million for Watkins.
Yeah, that is true.
Put that 60 mil somewhere else. That's, you know,
true. I forgot about that for sure.
Matisse Tel was quoted at 60 million.
He was.
So, yeah. A little bit of breaking news here. Ismaël Bennacer looks like he's on his way to Marseille.
Yep.
That's interesting.
I mean, yeah. He's a good low player. He's a very Marseille player.
Yeah, I see that.
But, yeah. It's not, no, they won't do anything. mid club. No, I'm kidding. I'm joking.
I mean, other things with Arsenal. I mean, just looking at their transfer activity, again, very shocked at the lack of urgency in this window. Again, not advocating for them to go on like some panic buy or whatever, but especially with Matisse Tel, very surprised they didn't make that deal happen or show more of an urgency for that. So, yeah, I guess they're kind of accepting that they're not going to win the Premier League this season. Of course, they can go for the Champions League and maybe that'll work. But with the lack of a nine, I'm not feeling great there for them. Not feeling great there at all. And hey, when Blake is here complaining in April about Arsenal's poor end to the season, we'll say I told you so. And that you should have bought a striker.
Another bit of news here.
Go on.
Tottenham are trying to revive deal to sign Alex Di Sassi.
Oh.
But the player has been reluctant to make the move.
Yeah, I wonder why.
It's not too appealing of a project, is it?
It really is not, no. But it makes sense bringing two center backs for them. That's actually good business there. I guess well done, Tottenham, I'm sure.
Telling you.
I'm good little transfer window. Oh my God, United's so embarrassing, dude. So embarrassing. How do we get to this point? It's insane. Especially when you look on the other side of Manchester and they're splashing 200 mil in a single window. Shall we go to Man City?
Let's do it.
They have today confirmed Nico Gonzalez from Porto for 60 million euros. Bringing their total spend this window up to over 210 million euros.
In the winter?
This window.
Unbelievable.
Oh my God, dude. It's unfair.
But you saw it coming. And it had surprised me up to this point that they didn't get a midfielder until today.
They got their midfielder.
They got their Rodri, their exact replica of Rodri, it looks like.
Yeah.
Because this guy is 6'2", right?
Yeah.
As you said, he could play as a six and an eight.
Or an eight.
Yeah.
Doesn't shy away from an aerial duel, I'm reading. Contributed 6 goals and 5 assists in all competitions for Porto this season and is quoted as an elusive dribbler. His ball retention is likely to offer immediate relief to Guardiola's ailing midfield.
And on top of that, he is a product of La Masia, which is perfect for Pep Guardiola's system because that is exactly the style of play that he plays. And Barcelona is actually the team that he coached. So it doesn't get more right up his alley than that.
Oh, I hate today, man. Oh, what a shit week in football. Oh, my God. What else, Antoine?
But you just knew it was coming, though, didn't you? You just knew it was coming. Let's look at some more here. Joao Felix is headed to AC Milan.
Another player. That, why couldn't we go for Joao Felix? Oh, my God.
You want me to put some more salt into the wound? Evan Ferguson.
Oh, my God.
Going to West Ham on a loan deal.
We're in dire need of a striker. 2 years ago, we were in for Evan Ferguson. I know it's a different manager and all that, but why don't you take the punt? Why don't you take the punt? He's on what? 50 grand a week over Brighton? Fucking pull that trigger, dude. Mm-hmm. Oh, my God. My God, I hate this club. I hate this club.
It'll be okay, man. You'll have a shit end of the season. You won't get relegated. And then I'm reading here that United are more about getting the house ready in order for the summer.
Get the fuck out of here. Get the house ready. The house is burning down. Jesus Christ. I saw a report from a senior Manchester United journalist that United officials are relaxed about the idea of making no signings today.
Relaxed. Oh my God.
Oh my God. Oh my fucking God. I hate this team. I hate this team so much. Go for something.
Agree. Totally.
I'm getting more and more desperate as the fucking, as the hours tick on. This is insane. Like, Ruben Amorim is sending out a signal, not even playing a striker, going, guys, please help me. Give me something here. I'll take an Evan Ferguson. I'll take Martial back at this point. Like, we need something over here. Please give me some help. And he's getting nothing. Nothing. I don't know if by the time this pod goes out, there will be some activity and United will have signed somebody. But at this point, it would be an absolute shock. I mean, absolute shock, because I don't see any sign of that happening. I'm almost trying to extend this podcast because I'm anticipating like a massive bombshell from Fabrizio Romano. And I'm just holding on to that hope that United will do something before we get off this pod. But
at least they're sending away Tyra Malasia to PSV Eindhoven.
Yes, Malasia is going to PSV now, we're seeing. Yeah. Rashford officially is at Villa now.
Both loan deals. Which
we need to talk about as well because that looks rough.
For Rashford?
Yes.
I'm optimistic for Rashford. The reason I say that is because Unai Emery, throughout his entire career, has rejuvenated players that have had bad stints. And Rashford right now is clearly on a very bad stint. They just sold Emi Buendia to Bayer Leverkusen, so that opens up a spot for him. And I think with the right mindset, if that can be achieved, that Rashford could do something special with Aston Villa, at least maybe to come back in United and raise a price tag for a further sale, because I don't think that United at this point in his career is something that he should pursue.
I think Aston Villa is a terrible move for Rashford. Terrible move.
Why is that?
If I was him or somebody around him that wants the best for Marcus Rashford, this would be the last move I would put on his table. I would want him to go to. Because, first of all, he's end of December, he goes, I want a fresh challenge. I want a new environment. I want to go somewhere where there's not as much media pressure on me. The football is different league, different players, different system and everything. But instead, he's not only going to Birmingham over a Milan, over a Barcelona, over any different league. He's staying in the Premier League, staying with the English, you know, journalism and scrutiny, but he's not even moving houses.
Okay.
He's commuting.
He's commuting.
He's commuting to Birmingham every day.
Like Nazareth.
Yeah. He's commuting 2 hours every day to training. Like, so that means that you're not getting away from any of the friends or maybe bad influences that you've had here in Manchester. Not getting away from any of that.
See,
staying in the same house. None of that.
See, I didn't know that.
That's why.
That's crazy.
Look at the pictures of him in an Aston Villa shirt. He looks horrible.
He does.
He looks so sad.
He does.
He looks so weathered. I'm seeing a double chin.
Yeah, he looks like he put on weight as well.
Yeah. And like, Amorim was talking about like how, oh, like we need players giving 100%. And some people are defending Rashford because he came and did some individual training going like, huh, how could you say he's not giving 100%? Well, I mean, the proof is in the pudding. The pudding was in him. Like, he was,
the pudding was in him.
Like, even in his interview, announcing that he was an Aston Villa player on the Villa channels, he was going about like, I know this is only a short-term deal and I'm looking to make the most out of it. Like,
have some fucking enthusiasm.
Have some fucking enthusiasm. At least don't be like straight, like your first statement as an Aston Villa player. Well, I'm only here for 6 months. Let's get this shit over with. And then I'm back to Manchester. I can stop making this dumbass commute. He clearly wants to maybe revive his career and then come back to United. But if he went to like, if he went to fucking Marseille, I don't know. Mm-hmm. If he went somewhere else where he is actually in a new environment for 6 months, comes back to Manchester United with a bit of a different mindset, and then he cooks, then fair enough. Mm-hmm. I want him to do well. But him not even moving houses, still training and doing his trade in England where all the same issues still prevail. How is this a new challenge? If I was Rashford's agent, I'd be worried about losing my job because you've been on about saving this guy's career and finding him a new club mm-hmm. after all these weeks, and this is the best he could do for him? Disgraceful. Disgraceful work. And Aston Villa is no easy job.
No, totally.
You have a lot of competition for places there.
You're in Champions League, round of 16. You're contending for Europe places in the Premier League. Now, you have competition at your position.
Serious competition. So maybe he's like a backup striker for Watkins. Maybe. Maybe he can play on the wing. But even that's going to be tough because, serious competition there. Mm-hmm. Again, I see the point of Unai Emery like reviving careers
That's probably the only reason why I'm optimistic about this. And it has to do with a lot of ifs. Like if he has the right mindset, if he could bring a positive attitude to the dressing room, to the team. It's very speculative.
Yeah.
But no, I totally see where you're coming from with the commute and the competition at his position, and there's that way to look at it as well.
Yeah. No, for sure. I think a lot of this depends on Rashford. Nobody is going to spoon feed him, and nobody is going to make him work hard and do the work and unlock the talent that we know that he has. Mm-hmm. He has to do it himself. And he's proved time and time again over the past couple of years that he cannot be trusted to do that. So I don't love this move. I really don't love this move. Okay. And I think this is the end of Marcus Rashford.
The end of Marcus Rashford.
The beginning of the end. Well, beginning of the end for Marcus Rashford was like last season, but I don't see him coming back.
Okay.
Which is sad because like he made his debut for United, what, 2015? Yeah. I was 11. Mm-hmm. I'm now almost 21. So I've grown up with this guy in a United shirt.
Yeah.
All I've known is United. I know a lot of United fans were losing their shit when that first picture dropped of him in a Villa kit. And I don't know why. I don't know what the reason is, but I didn't have that same feeling because I've been expecting and I've been getting ready for Rashford leaving United for so long now. And like, honestly, for me, based on his actions over the past couple of years, like it's good riddance. So,
wow.
Again, and this is with the preface of I like Marcus Rashford. When he's at his best, he's my favorite player. I want him to go revive his career at Villa, come back, and fulfill the prophecy of being United's next savior, winning us whatever titles, whatever. But my confidence of that happening, 3%.
Even that's generous.
Yeah.
Oh.
I know. He's like, and seeing the pictures of him all weathered and everything, like, it makes me have even less confidence. It looks like he's like forming into Gabriel Bangalore in front of our eyes here. Like it's bad, dude. It's really bad. It's really bad. Other breaking news. Bayern is bringing a replacement for Matisse Tell. So that is basically official. Gabriel Vidovic from Mainz is coming in to replace him. Big up, I guess.
Other than that, I feel like Santiago Jimenez goes to Milan.
Oh, that's another good one. Yeah.
Milan cooking this transfer window.
They are, dude. They're
doing very well. Under a new coach, Conceição, after Fonseca gets sacked. They can have a great second half of the season.
Did you see that La Liga teams? Like, the entire league across this window have spent like 3 million euros.
Only?
Yeah.
Wow.
Outspent by like the English third division.
My goodness.
I think the Italian third division, Ligue 2. Wow. Like obviously like the Saudi league, but other Asian leagues as well. Like their FFP is crazy over there.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of see the point of Barcelona saying that Tebas is like kind of ruining shit, but yeah.
Yeah.
Insane, dude. Insane. Somebody put a picture up of, the AC Milan starting 11.
Mm-hmm.
And, there's a wall between Pulisic and Jimenez.
That's good.
That's really good. They got a sick team, though, looking at it on paper. Holy shit. This is really nice. Kyle Walker, Santiago Jimenez, and, oh my God, yeah, along with the other, I guess Ben Hasser is leaving, but still, yeah, damn, they are really cooking, huh? Damn. All right. What else is there?
It's looking pretty dry from here. Hopefully there's some better news later in the day.
PSG's not doing nothing?
No. The director said that it was done.
Yeah.
Yeah, which is I'm completely fine with.
I mean you've done your shit.
We did the outgoings, we did the incomings. We cooked. I think we cooked.
We absolutely cooked.
We had one of the better transfer windows in the club.
Fuck you guys.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Is Liverpool doing anything? Did we hear?
No.
No.
I mean, do they need to do anything?
That's the thing, right?
I don't think they do.
Yeah, I don't think they have to. Yeah. Damn, man.
They're good.
Yeah.
They're good.
Yeah. Yeah. Looking at other things here, like other transfers to talk about, I don't really think there is anything. I mean, Dorgu is officially coming to United as well, mm-hmm. along with Aiden Heaven, I believe his name is, youth center back from Arsenal. Who are bringing into the first team?
He's not touching the pitch, let's be honest.
Guys, we made two first team signings this winter. Oh my God. Bullshit, dude. Bullshit. So yeah, that's about it that we have to talk about here.
Yeah.
And that'll do it for the pod. Very Will depressing, it, very depressing one for me.
Will it do it for the pod? FPL roundup.
Ha ho! Of course. This does cheer me up a little
bit. Yes.
Okay. I keep forgetting about it every single time. I'm sorry. Do you want to lead this time with some FPL roundup, Antoine?
I can lead the FPL roundup if you want me to, yeah?
Oh, yeah. Start from the bottom. There's a clear distinction between...
Yes, and there always is, it seems like. Mm-hmm. No more Mr. Nice Guy. Ever since last year, he's been putting up stinkers. He's very consistent on the stinkers, as this week he dropped 61 points so far, with the average being 60 points. Dean Henderson in net with a nice clean sheet against Julian's team. Mateta is looking to be a great signing. Great, great signing for no more Mr. Nice Guy. Obviously, Salah captain. He still has Palmer to play and the Liverpool boys to play their second fixture.
Yep.
But compared to everyone else having multiple double game week players in Everton and Liverpool, he is staying back with 61 points. Third place is Blake with 73 points. Unfortunately, started for Bruggen in that 7-0 drubbing against Nottingham Forest. but did have Robinson, who provided an assist against Newcastle, and Alexander-Arnold, who had a clean sheet. Morgan Rogers, unfortunately, for a one-point stinker. Mo Salah captain Szoboszlai in there. Interesting transfer he did. No Everton players, which is kind of odd, but Chris Wood in there with a hat-trick for 17 points, and Raul Jimenez scored a goal for 8 points.
You know what I'm surprised at? What is it? Nobody triple captain Salah.
Yeah.
Nobody.
Nobody.
Because we played our chips. We played the assistant manager chip, which we'll get onto.
Yeah.
But even these two, they just did nothing.
Mm-hmm.
A double game week where Salah plays Bournemouth and Everton, you don't triple captain him?
This is where you capitalize. And Blake in fourth place does not capitalize.
This is the type of performance that you need to capitalize on if you want to catch Miles.
This is where the board looks at the manager and rethinks their future.
Exactly.
You know? Because Shiabedi, a Shield manager, it's been rough this season. We remember the great comeback from last season. We remember the relegation shouts. He then got saved by his players. But was it the tactics that saved him, or was it the players that saved him?
Yep.
And this season, it proves to be leaning more and more. It was the players that saved him because the tactics are still not there, and he is down more than 100
points. And he had a lot of consultants with him last season who he's kind of shied away from, because I don't know if it's pride or ego or what it is, but he's kind of refused to help a little bit this season. I think it's costing him.
His assistant coaches have
been piping up like, hey, you got to bring in this guy and this guy and this guy, and he just hasn't been doing it.
Totally. And the fans too. The fans are quite disappointed. To be down 140 points from the third, that's crazy, from the third place, who is... one of the worst managers in the league, the third place guy. Let's be honest here.
Oh yeah, this is 2024 Sheffield United we're talking about here, and you're below that. He has an overall ranking of 6 million.
Yeah, so it's looking rough for Shiabadi Ashil. We'll see what the board decide to do. I think there's rumors actually came out today. Fabrizio Romano reported that they are looking to stick with the manager. So
disgraceful. Just no ambition from that board.
Yeah, it's a divided opinion for sure. I think it's better if they stick with the manager for the rest of the season.
And
then maybe next season we can move on to something
new.
And
you know what? It's
fresh.
Disgraceful, because no more Mr. Rice Guy. Like, even like he, like, Blake is kind of overshadowing how bad this manager is, because, like, you really want to solidify your place and you're bringing in Darwin Nunez. You're bringing in... you're bringing in Dan Byrne here. What are we doing? What are we doing here? And, like... just some of these picks are just absolutely outrageous, especially when you have other going-ons in the league and you're just not capitalizing on it. There just seems to be a general ignorance from these two. And just a massive skill gap in this league that I don't think is ever going to be filled at this point.
Unfortunately, it does pitch into the Farmers League comments that we usually do see under the Instagram posts. But, you know, what can you do, right? When there's a clear distinction between the first and the second managers...
Yep.
Pep Guardiola's Arne Slot's to the couldn't tell you the Badia Chile and then Mr. Nice Guy. There will be shots of Farmers League. But let's get on to the third place team this week. It is Macaroni and Cheese with 83 points. Very consistent he is. Talked to him the other day. It was a press conference before the deadline. And he said that he was calm coming into this, and that he actually called up an assistant for this week. And for the upcoming weeks, he called up David Moyes.
That's so weird.
That is weird. Why is that weird?
Because I also had David Moyes.
Really?
Yeah.
So yeah, David Moyes is going to come in to assist the team a little bit. 12 points this week. NDI with 8 points. Mikulenko with 6 points. Dean Henderson, 6 points as well. Mo Salah, obviously 32 points captain. Still has a game to play with Cody Gakpo in there as well. Mm. Not much on the bench. 4 points from Robinson, but he'll get over it. And yeah.
Palmer still to play as well.
Palmer still to play, yeah. Ahmad needs to go soon. I think that's the one thing he was pointing out in the press conference. He was quite displeased with Ahmad's latest performances. You know, the disallowed goal last week really put a nail in the coffin, I think. But yeah.
Yeah, I mean, a good next three coming, though, for Ahmad. I mean, you play Spurs, you use a terrible defense, you play Everton, and then you play Ipswich. So
it'll all depend what the manager thinks the first team should look like and the starting 11.
Okay.
You know?
Okay.
90 points for our first place team this week.
And still more to come.
It's roll of the dice.
Yeah.
Alisson Becker in net for 9 points. Did he get bonus points?
Great question. He...
He did. Two bonus points.
Wow.
Two bonus points for Alisson Becker. Great, great, great transfer from roll of the dice. You see, one of the more proactive managers in this league likes to use his transfers early.
Thank you.
So did pay off there. Alexander Arnold, Mikulenko on the bench or in the defense for 12 points combined.
Yep.
Then you have Mo Salah captain as always, and Chris Wood in there, 17 points. Did stick with him throughout the season.
Mm-hmm. That was a bold call.
I did have a press conference with him earlier. I forgot to ask him what he thought about the Gordon Isak partnership, and specifically Gordon, and how he contributes to this particular team.
You know, the manager is telling me that he really has his eyes on Brian Mbeumo.
Okay.
But it doesn't quite fit in with the budget, so he's going to have to make some shuffles around. Might have to lay somebody off, but it should free up the funds to bring in.
Oh, we're doing so good. Continue.
To bring in Brian Mbeumo.
Maybe a loan deal is going to have to get free up some wages there. 75% of the wages to another club. I think that might work for Brian Mbeumo. You know if the budget difference is
I'm big? Looking at the budget of Roll the Deitch compared to the budget of Shea Batty Ashile, and this is unbelievable. Roll the Deitch, did you know, has five more in squad value than Shea Batty Ashile. That's the difference between an Ahmad and a Palmer.
Wow.
That's actually insane. Holy shit.
Like, brother, what are you doing? I think that wraps it up for the FPL roundup. Tune in next week to see how the game week finished. It's FA Cup next week. You have got to be kidding me.
So we're going to actually update this current game week when it finishes up. I think we also have League Cup going on between Spurs and Tottenham. So
Spurs and Tottenham?
And then we figure out
between Spurs and Tottenham?
Yes.
Between Spurs and Tottenham.
Oh, shit. Fuck.
Double down three times.
Fuck. Between Spurs and Liverpool.
Yes.
And depending on who wins that, may have a double, and that's going to impact how things go in 25. But we'll cross that bridge when we get there. All right? So, this has been the 6-Hour Box Podcast, everybody. And thank you, everybody, for listening. It's been a depressing week, mostly, besides FPL for me. But I want to thank you, everybody, for listening again. Apologies about Blake. Sickness gets everybody, unfortunately. But I'm sure next week he'll come in with a vengeance to really, really shit on me. And hopefully by next week we'll have like another segment to do, maybe to fill in for the boringness of the FA Cup.
Yep.
And I'm looking forward to it.
Are we doing a tier list next week?
Maybe.
Oh, I'm so down.
Maybe. What are we going to tier? I don't know. We're gonna find out. Or we do like an overrated 11.
We could do that.
Or something like that. Underrated 11.
Mateus Nunez is sliding right in there. Holy shit.
Underrated 11, we put Rodrigo in.
Yeah.
Okay.
We could do something like that.
Okay. All right. I'm looking forward to it already. Everybody, we will see you in a week. We hope you have a fantastic week watching the football. And for me and Antoine, we will see you next week. Goodbye, everybody.
We out.
See ya.
Oh, I didn't.
Mm-hmm.